Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to the show formerly known as All Bases Covered, the Out of Bounds podcast. We will have some new artwork, new banner, new music, new everything, hopefully here soon. Spoke to somebody. They are submitting stuff to me tonight for the new theme song and the new artwork. So hopefully if it's moderately good, I can send it over to Josh and Sam for their seal of approval. But Sam's running a little late, as per usual. Surprise, surprise there. But we do have Josh here. What's going on, buddy?
What's going on, buddy?
Nothing, man.
I'm actually on time for a show.
You are on time for a change, so that's kind of surprising. But
I was kind of starting to be like Sam for a little bit.
You know, I used to get so excited. Like, I'm still excited for the March Madness tournament, but when I was younger, like in my 20s, dude, I remember like specifically like requesting work off for tomorrow, for like Thursday and Friday, for like the opening rounds, just so I can watch basketball.
Dude, I was the same way. I don't know what it is. I loved Bobby Huggins when he was at UC.
Yeah.
And after that, like when he got fired, he let go. I was still a fan with Annie Kennedy. And when they got rid of Annie Kennedy, it just felt like my love for college basketball just went away.
I did like Mick Cronin. You know? I have to say, I still did like Mick Cronin when he was at UC.
I didn't.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. But, you know,
I mean, I'm just a huggy bear all the way.
You know what I find was the best time, too, Josh, is usually March Madness tournament coincided with St. Patrick's Day.
Yes. Yes.
And that was like...
It was always like the start of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like the best, right? Like you take off, you go out drinking, and you're watching basketball, and you're out boozing with your buddies on St. Patty's Day. It was fantastic. It was really just a fun time during those younger years of ours. Huh?
And that's what was weird about this year. I was like, why isn't the tournament starting? It always starts right when St. Patty is, never after.
The thing is, St. Patty's Day
wasn't always before.
St. Patty's Day fell on a Sunday this year. And I feel like, you're right. The tournament was normally like, has already started by now.
St. Patty's Day, yeah.
I think
St. Patty's Day should have been round two of the tournament.
I think it's the way March, the week started, and a lot of the conference tournaments didn't start until, like, March 6th or later. And a lot of the big conference tournaments didn't start until, like, March 16th, 17th. And so they were all late. Huh?
But this doesn't make sense. That doesn't make any sense because the women's, they had their conference championships a week prior.
Yeah. I don't know.
It made zero sense on how they did it this year. The women started a week earlier, and usually the women's doesn't start until after the men's. And I know it's going to start after the men's, but that means the women are going to have a week off of nothing.
Yeah.
And then they're going to start the tournament. So they get the extra break to rest, where the men's Sunday was always like the ACC title game and everybody was excited about. And then Thursday started like your St. Patty's Day weekend and basketball started.
I know exactly. And it's weird this year, right? It's just a little weird. So,
yep.
Hey Sam, what's going on, buddy?
Heyo.
Yeah. So real quick, I'm going to go over some facts and trends of the NCAA tournament. So for those of you listening, if you're filling out a bracket, now's the time to write some of this down. So I'm going to go over some facts and trends real quick, and then I'm going to tell you who my picks are for some of these. Okay. So I'm going to start with this fact. In 11 of the past 12 tournaments, which is when the first four started. So the, I think, the first four started about 12, 13 years ago. at least one of its participants has advanced to the second round. Two have advanced to the Final Four, UCLA in 2021 and VCU in 2011, and three others have reached the Sweet 16. My pick for the team that played in the first four that I think could get hot and make a run, at least win their first-round matchup and maybe make a run to the Sweet 16, is Colorado State. Colorado State obliterated Virginia, and they get matched up with a very up-and-down Texas team in the first round as a 10 seed. Also, Colorado State this year had six quad one wins. The Mountain West was stronger than it had been before. The biggest deficiency for Colorado State is they are a poor three-point shooting team, but they make up for it with a very suffocating defense, which ranks top 40 in defensive efficiency. So my pick that of a team that could come out of the first four and make a run is Colorado State. Next, we have a recent trend where a number 15 seed has won its first-round game in three consecutive years, and all have gone to the Sweet 16. I'm going to tell you guys now, I don't have a 15 seed that I like over the number two seeds. A lot of it is because I believe that the number two seeds are incredibly strong this year. And also a lot of these number 15 seeds don't match up very well with the teams that they're playing. If you guys want to continue that trend and you want to pick a number 15 seed over a number two seed, my recommendation would be South Dakota State over Iowa State. But again, I am not picking that game. I don't think any of the 15 seeds. I think that trend dies this year. So I do not have a number 15 seed pulling the upset. Now, at least one top four seed has lost in the first round in 14 of the past 15 tournaments. Okay? One top four seed. I have a couple top four seeds losing in the first round, including Duke. The last time Duke entered the tournament on a three-game losing streak, they also lost in the first round. That was 7 years ago. So Duke, I have, who's the number four seed, I have Duke losing in the first round. I also have Alabama losing in the first round to Charleston. And I also have, in a bit of an upset, I do also have Illinois losing to Morehead State. So those are my top four seeds that I have getting bounced in the first round. I don't think any of the number one or number two seeds are going to lose in the first round. I could be wrong, but those are the teams that I have losing in the first round. Another fact here is a double-digit seed has advanced to the Sweet 16 in 15 straight tournaments and 36 of 38 overall. So I also have I have two double-digit seeds in the Sweet 16 this year. I have Oregon. I have three double-digit seeds making it to the Sweet 16 this year. I have Oregon, Drake, and New Mexico all making the Sweet 16. Oregon is getting hot at the right time, and I like their path to the Sweet 16. Oregon, I think, has a very winnable matchup against South Carolina in the first round. Then they would potentially get the winner of Creighton and Akron, and Oregon matches up very well with Creighton. So those are some of my double-digit seeds that I see making a run to the Sweet 16.
Who's the team that's playing Wisconsin, number 12?
James Madison.
So James Madison, yes. So that's one also I would look. I think they would make it into the Sweet 16.
You're right. They have a very good path, especially if Vermont pulls the upset against Duke. I think they have a very good path to the Sweet 16. So that's another good call out. That's a good call out, Josh. Let's see. All right. Last fact and last pick here that I have for this is at least one team seeded seventh or worse has reached the Final Four in 9 of the past 10 tournaments. So rated seventh or worse, making the final. Making the Final Four. If I'm looking at a team that is around that area that I think could go on a run to make the Final Four. Actually, I have one. I have Oregon in my Final Four. Oh, I'm sorry, no, I don't. I have Oregon in the Elite Eight. I apologize. I have Oregon losing to Purdue. But I do think Oregon could make it to the Final Four. If you're looking for a team in that 7 to 11 range and you want to go with that trend, I think Oregon is a very strong candidate to make it. The other team that I would say that could get very hot and make a run and get to the Final Four is Nebraska. Now, Nebraska does have a tough matchup with Houston if Houston gets past Longwood and Nebraska gets past Texas A&M. But Nebraska is a very sneaky, good three-point shooting team. The problem for Nebraska has been on the road this year, where they are just 3-8 on the road. Now, granted, the NCAA tournament, they're not true road games. They're neutral site games. But Fred Hoiberg has Nebraska playing pretty well, and they are a number 8 seed. So that's another team that I could see getting hot. And then especially, if they beat Houston and then they get a matchup with a James Madison or a Vermont in the Sweet 16 win there, then their path to the Final Four starts to look a little bit better. So Oregon and Nebraska, if you want to go that route, if you want to pick a team rated seventh or lower making it to the Final Four, those would be my two picks. So that's what I got.
Nebraska, go figure. You're saying Nebraska.
Now, I will say I've changed my tune on my national championship pick. I had originally picked Auburn. I have Auburn now losing. I think Arizona. I have Arizona and Purdue in the championship game. And I know a lot of people are not sold on Purdue, and I totally get it. I completely understand the reasoning. But I think Purdue wants to get that taste out of their mouth of losing to a 16 seed last year, and I could see them going on a run. Their offense is a lot better. They shoot the three a lot better this year. Their offensive efficiency is number 3 in the nation. Last year they ranked 276th in three-point shooting. This year, they ranked 2nd. So their three-point shooting is miles better. I look for Purdue to make a run. So that's some of my tournament facts and trends, and those are my picks. So get your brackets out. Let's fill those out, and maybe you guys can win some of your pools here. All right. Speaking of pools, Josh, are you going to join the bracket? I sent you the link, like, multiple times.
Yeah, I'll join in here in a little bit. I was just
all
waiting.
Right. Okay. All right. Cool. Guys, any questions, anything else you want to add about the NCAA tournament, which kicks off tomorrow?
So I got a quick question for you, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So I obviously everyone's touting, UConn to be the soon to be, this year, right?
Yeah.
How likely is it that, like, Stetson pulls off an upset?
Stetson, as the number 16 seed, I would give them less than a 1% chance to pull the upset.
They're a well-coached team, actually. Obviously, they're not top-tier talent, but are you really going to give them less than 1%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's the thing. UConn has 21 wins in quads 1 and 2 this year, which means they have 21 wins against really quality opponents. They are deep. They have played extremely well all season, and even in games where they've lost, it's not like they just flat out didn't show up. Stetson had the luck
Did we lose you, Mike?
Stetson only has 2 victories this year outside of quad 4. They beat UCF and then they beat Charlotte and that's it. Stetson, I don't think the way Connecticut plays has a good shot at beating them. If I was going to pick any number one seed to be in a bit of danger of losing, it would be Houston against Longwood. Now, I love Houston's defense, and I've been touting Houston as a Final Four team, as a team that could possibly play for the national title. But Longwood has size, and they have experience. They have They don't have much size. I'm sorry. I apologize. I said that. They don't have a lot of size, but they have a lot of speed, and they have a lot of experience. They have a ton of experience, and their net ranking this year was 162, the highest of any 16 seed in the tournament, and they also had the highest KenPom rating. So if I'm looking at a number 16 seed to beat a number one seed, which I don't think it'll happen, I know it's happened more frequently than it ever has. Virginia was the first to lose, and then we had Purdue lose to a 16 seed last year. But I don't think it's going to happen this year, but if I had to pick a number one seed to pull it off, it's Longwood. Or, sorry, a 16 seed to pull it off, I'd pick Longwood over Houston.
I got one more question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
What is your tournament's biggest snub for the teams that didn't make it?
Indiana State.
Okay.
Indiana State, 100%. Indiana State, really, I mean, if you look at their schedule, if you look at, how the way they played, and yeah, they lost to a really good team in Drake in the conference championship game of the tournament, okay? But Indiana State was 28-6 this year. Drake had the exact same record. Indiana State, unfortunately, lost to Drake by 4 points in the conference championship game. I really think that they deserved a shot in the tournament. And I think that of some of these other at-large teams, they're better than. If I'm looking at a couple teams here that were rated kind of low that got in, I think that Indiana State is better than Boise State or Colorado, either one of those teams, and who are playing in a play-in game. The problem became, I think Indiana State was a lock for the tournament. The problem was we had a couple bid thieves. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with bid thieves, but it's guys. Bid thieves are teams that weren't going to make the NCAA tournament but happened to win the conference tournament, so they get an automatic bid. I don't believe that Duquesne or NC State would have made the tournament had they not won the conference tournament. And because some of those teams won their conference tournaments, that became why some of these other deserving teams that were, you know, that could have made it as an at-large got bumped off, bumped out of the tournament. But I, to me, it's Indiana. To me, it's Indiana State. They were the biggest snub for me. All right, guys.
That's all the questions
so,
for me.
All right, awesome. I am excited to tune in, but let's shift gears to wrestling for a little bit. We can kind of wrap up with some other free agent signings and some other shit that I want to ask you. Let's go to wrestling though, because WrestleMania 40 is, what are we, like 3 weeks away, Josh?
What, 19 or 18 days, I think? 17 days now?
Okay, 17, 18 days. Okay. So, WrestleMania 40 is coming up. We, by pretty much assume, it should be a pretty big card. I think it would have been a bigger card had, you know, CM Punk not gotten hurt. But I told Josh this today when we were talking on the phone. My biggest thing is I feel like we don't know about any other match going on except for The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and Seth Rollins. The build-up for anything else hasn't been there. And,
no.
And even if there has been, even if there has been some build, it's not getting the same amount of time to develop like the other feud. Sorry, Josh, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to say you're absolutely right on that. I mean, the only match they continue to talk about is the tag team match, and that's their focus. Like Roman Reigns, yes, The Rock acknowledged him as the tribal chief, whatever, you know, but it doesn't feel as big anymore. You know, that Cody Reigns match doesn't feel as big. The big match is going to be night one with the tag team match.
Yeah.
Same thing with Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. Big is what it should be because Seth Rollins is putting too much focus on
the tag
team match and not Drew McIntyre. So it's a weird dynamic that they're trying. Maybe it works, but like I'm not as excited about the card as I once was.
And I'll tell you what, the women have a phenomenal match in Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch, and that has hardly gotten a peep, I feel like.
No, they've been teasing that for a while.
Okay.
I mean, they're putting Becky Lynch through the ringer right now, facing Nia Jax. This is going to be her second time fighting Nia Jax. And then Liv Morgan, they did her 2 weeks ago. So Rhea Ripley just hasn't wrestled much. It's like Rhea Ripley is more like a Brock Lesnar, it almost feels like, anymore. You don't really get to see her fight and wrestle. She's in the background with the Judgment Day, but nothing spectacular as we've seen her in the ring.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Rhea Ripley, but I don't know if I want them. I feel like the problem is with the women's division right now is we got a lot of people. We got two really good new champions in Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. And I also feel like Ripley really hasn't had that feud to make her pop as women's champion since she became champion. And my fear is WWE is going to take the belts off both Ripley and Sky and put them on more well-known people who are established in Becky Lynch and Bayley, and then we get the problem that we had in the men's division a couple of years ago, Josh, where the titles weren't building those new stars to take over. They were just recycling either part-timers or guys that had already been champion. And now I don't feel that's the case. I feel like now they're doing a pretty good job of pushing new talent, and to me, the main event scene at WWE feels really good compared to where it was like 5 or 6 years ago, where there's like probably, what, 6 or 7 guys that you could say could be legitimate champions, right? But in the women's division now, it feels like there's like three or four people who you could legitimately say, yeah, I could see them being the women's champion, right? It's Bianca Belair, it's Becky Lynch, it's Charlotte Flair, and it's Rhea Ripley and Bayley, and maybe Alexa Bliss, but we haven't seen her, so I don't know. But like, that's it, really, at this time.
Well, they got Jade Cargill working in the background, so I mean, I think she's going to be a big star when she finally actually comes out to do stuff. But like Io Sky, I don't know, if you watch Friday nights here recently, and she just does not look good as a champion at all. Like,
okay.
Just look at her moveset, and like she like looks like she's fake hitting you, and it's not real hitting. Like it just, you can definitely tell it's fake when she's in the ring.
Promos for them too, like Asuka is super talented, but she can't really cut a promo, so it's hard for fans to get behind her.
Oh no, I get that. I mean, that's why you've got Dakota Kai right there as their mouthpiece, and before that was Bayley was their mouthpiece, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I like the fact that Bayley was turning. Because you can organically start to see that. I think she wins. I don't think they're going to take the belt off of Rhea Ripley. I think she retains.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I think she's going to retain.
All right.
She's too big of a star, and she's just with the crowd. You can tell by the crowd who they're behind, right? Rhea Ripley still no. Yes, the Judgment Day is a heel faction. But Rhea Ripley is a face.
Yeah.
Right? People still cheer for her.
So let me. So Josh, here while we're waiting for Sam to dial back in, I don't wanna do our female Mount Rushmore without him being present as we talk about that, but. I just want to shift gears. I know we were talking. Wrestling. So we were talking wrestling, and I still want to talk wrestling. But I want to. This question was posed to me the other day, and I had to think about it because I didn't watch this company a ton growing up. I was always kind of a WWE guy. I can't say I didn't turn to WCW a couple times, especially with like Goldberg and NWO, but I always grew up watching WWE. So Mount Rushmore of WCW wrestlers, who are your four greatest? I think for me, Sting and Ric Flair are automatics there for greatest WCW wrestlers. But the last two, I really have a hard time with. So I'm curious, Josh, if you were making a strictly WCW Mount Rushmore.
I mean, honestly, you've got to put Hogan back on there.
Why?
Just for what he did. I mean, if it wasn't for Hogan and the NWO, that WCW would have went out of business a long time before that. That's how they got popular.
Yeah.
So I think you have to put Hogan there.
Hey, who do
the
we
other
have?
One, I mean, you got to go back to one of the couple that the NWA, maybe like a Harley Race, or Dusty Rhodes.
I've
the
Dusty
man
from
Dwayne Dusty Rhodes.
Hey, who? What's going on, man? Who we got calling in from the 2278 number? One of your boys, Josh? Josh. All right. Because Josh isn't talking.
I said it could have been one of my buddies. I told him to listen to our podcast, so.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways.
I think Dusty Rhodes should be on there, too.
I think so. I think Dusty Rhodes, and I had to put Diamond Dallas Page in there, man.
No. You can't.
Why?
Can't. No.
Why?
What he had 4 or 5 year run, and he didn't start until he was 36 years old. He got popular for just a little bit. Come on. We're talking guys that were there and made that business.
Okay. All right. Oh, Sam's calling back in, so now we can do – now Sam's back. He had to drop for his other job, apparently. So, you know, let's fuck that shit. But now that Sam's back, we were talking WCW Mount Rushmore, Sam, before we get into our female Mount Rushmore. And remember now, our female Mount Rushmore for WWE is based on looks, not in-ring talent. So – Sam, before we go to our female Mount Rushmore, do you want to take a stab at your WCW Mount Rushmore?
See, my Mount Rushmore is going to be a little biased because I'm going to pick wrestlers that I personally liked watching.
Okay.
So, all right. I'm going to go. All right, you know what? I'm going to let you guys go first, and then I'll go second. How about that? Give me a minute to think.
All right, I have Sting, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, and Diamond Dallas Page.
I had Flair, Sting, Dusty Rhodes, and Hogan.
Yep, so I had Hogan, Sting, DDP, and Ric Flair.
Hey! All right, Sam. Me and Sam both have DDP on our WCW Mount Rushmore. So fuck it, Josh.
That was the one I was a little hesitant because, like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe he's not one of the greats, but I loved watching him wrestle as a kid.
Yeah.
So that's the one I'm a little bit biased about. You know, maybe he's not the greatest, but I still love watching him.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody liked the Diamond Cutter, but I mean, he didn't move the needle like some of the other guys, though. That was the reason why, and a true WCW guy, that's why I kind of went back with Dusty Rhodes. I think Harley Race or even Big Van Vader could have made that list.
Well, so, I went back and forth with Josh between DDP. It was between, for me, DDP and Booker T.
I could see Booker T.
That was tough because Booker T was United States champion. He was world champion. He was tag team champion, TV champion. You know, like he basically did it all, and he was very good at WCW. And by the time he got to WWE, I felt like he was kind of buried a little bit by, like, Triple H and them and The Rock. But his WCW days, he was – excellent. So, all right, guys.
Peter.
Oh, it's not my background this time.
No, I muted whoever it is. All right, guys. Female Mount Rushmore. WWE. The four best look. Now, I know we did a bracket for this. But that's different because that was voted on by people of the show, fans of the show. This is our personal Mount Rushmore of WWE women.
Okay. All right. Who you got, Lou?
All right. I thought you would. I thought you would go first, Josh. Fine. Okay. First off, I got to go Tori Wilson. Tori Wilson. And next, because of – it's hard for me to leave Sable off, but looking back on things and looking at, like, people that have come since then, there's so more good – like, it's hard for me to, like, see, like, Sunny – so freaking hot in their time. But I still got to go Tori Wilson, Stacy Keibler, Becky Lynch, and I think I have to go Nikki Bella. I think those are my four. Huh?
Trish doesn't make the list?
Trish doesn't make the list for me.
Wow.
And Lita. Lita was so hot back in the day, and Trish was attractive. But I think Tori Wilson is so much more attractive than Trish Stratus.
Not so fast, my friend.
All right.
Now, I do match on two of them. So,
okay.
I mean, I do have Trish Stratus.
Okay.
I've got Becky Lynch.
Okay.
I've got Stacey Keibler.
Okay.
And there's a little tiny girl that just came up so innocent and looked so good. And unfortunately, she's married to Phil Brooks, a.k.a.
AJ
CM Punk.
Lee.
AJ Lee.
Yeah, she was pretty phenomenal, too.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. She almost made my cut. She almost made my cut, and it was really tough. But I think at the end of the day, there was some good-looking broads that it was tough to leave out of the top four. So, all right, Sam, who do you got for your top four?
All right, I got Becky.
Okay.
Stacey.
Okay.
Lita. And Trish.
Okay. And Trish, okay. I mean, I have to say the amount of hot – I mean, now the girls are attractive and they're also super athletic. But, man, that time frame, I would say from, like, 2000 to 2010, that decade of, like, Lita and Trish Stratus and frickin' Candice Michelle and, you know, Tori Wilson and Stacey Keibler and Sable and the Cat. I mean, that was a pretty great era of chicks there from 1999-2000 until like 2010.
I would say it was that timeline that set up the wrestlers for today, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, but those girls weren't as skilled in the ring as like let's say like Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair and some of these other ones that have come up. Like Tori Wilson and Stacey Keibler were phenomenal looking, but their in-ring skills were non-existent compared to...
Agreed. But at the same time, I think that some of the older, female wrestlers, they were on the mic a little bit more, too. So it was more about, like, listening to them talk and then looking at how they look, really. It wasn't about the wrestling back then.
Hey Lou.
Yeah.
Our listener wants to get in on this Mount Rushmore of women. So do you want to unmute him?
Yeah, he's unmuted. Let's go. Let's hear it.
Let go, Matt.
Hey, can we go back to when it very first started in the early 90s with Miss Elizabeth? I know she wasn't a wrestler, but.
There you go. Yeah, go for it, man. Miss Elizabeth can be on there. Sure thing, man.
Because they really don't have to be a wrestler, right?
No, correct. They don't have to be a wrestler. They just have to be in the WWE.
And then second one has to be, it has to be Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte. I mean, she's come a long way from the way she looks. She is athletic as she is in the ring and out of the ring. Her charisma and everything is what says WWE wrestling.
Yeah,
okay.
I think with Flair taking that mole off her face really helped her out too.
I feel like her face looks a little beat up, but that's okay. That's okay. I don't personally find Charlotte Flair very attractive, but that's all right. I do.
I think she's cuter now than she was when she first came up.
Okay.
Hey, how come Alexa Bliss didn't make anyone's cut?
It's hard, man. It's only four, dude. It's hard.
I know.
I mean, you got. Stacey Keibler is probably the best of them all, you know, honestly. You know, the length, the beauty, and just what she has in general.
Yeah.
Then I would have to go. My fourth one would have to be Lita.
Okay.
Because her in-ring action and out-of-the-ring action, the way she looks, she held herself very well over the career. And to this day, she still has that body.
Yeah.
That she does.
God. Dude, it was always a treat to see her jump off the top rope with her thong sticking out.
Yeah.
That
don't get me wrong. Tori has it, but I think Lita is there definitely before her.
It's funny, though. I think Tori Wilson looks better now than she did back when she was in WWE.
Dude, what are you talking about, bro? She looks old as shit.
No, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on,
dude.
Man.
Dude. I am telling you. She looks like she's been around the ringer once or twice now. Like, she's still a good-looking woman, but no, she's definitely not hotter now than she was.
Dude, I'm telling
you
right now.
What do you guys think about Kamala, though?
Who?
I mean,
Tori looks like she aged pretty well. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have to agree with Mike on that.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you guys think about Kamala?
Thank you, Sam. Kamala, she's okay. She's all right.
I like a little Kamala.
I think
she's banging.
Who's the one? Mandy Rose? Is that it? Mandy or Lita?
About Mandy.
Mandy
so
Rose
sick.
is pretty good looking.
Oh, dude, she's fucking amazing. with them freaking OnlyFans.
Also, I think Lacey Evans too, kind of, right or no? Maybe Lacey Evans is.
If you're gonna do that, you might as well throw a couple other maybes in there.
Who's,
you might as well say Charlotte
else?
Flair is there too. Then,
yeah.
I mean, Layla, the one from La Cool,
okay.
She was pretty good looking.
Who was that?
What
Melina?
About Scary?
Who?
What about Scary Sherry?
Oh no. No chance. No way. Come on.
Dude, you still love China, dude. Come on.
Gross.
You know that was your number one woman.
No, never. Never. I was more of an Ivy guy, okay? If I wanted a slightly masculine, I was going after Ivy or Ivory.
What about Luna Vachon?
No. Hell no.
She was hot as shit.
Next thing you know, we'll be adding Nia Jax.
I tell you what, Nia Jax actually has a pretty face.
She does.
Sorry,
she
I meant
does.
Nia.
But yeah, she's definitely not. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna have to go revisit.
Oh, you're gonna switch up your Mount Rushmore now?
No, I'm not switching it up. But Ivory was not bad looking back in the day.
No, she wasn't.
No.
You know you like Jacqueline.
Oh God!
Jackie.
No, I was not a. That's who. What's her? Jimmy Uso's wife looks like a little bit.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie. Jake Cargill's actually pretty good looking.
You know
she scares
Brandon,
me.
You know that's Brandon Phillips.
Hey,
what's
the new girl's name? What's the new girl's name that says is it Trish time or Tish time?
Tiffany Stratton. Okay. Yeah, she's. She's not bad either. She's pretty good. She's pretty good looking.
She's got a smoking body. Not bigger on her face, but she's smoking body.
Yeah. Oh man.
Dude, it seems like somebody's NXT one like Rose. Rocky Perez.
The next question is.
Yeah. What's the next question, Sam?
Oh, I was gonna say the next question is, how many of these women did Vince McMahon cajole into actually wrestling?
Probably half of them. I think all the older ones for sure. I think he did take advantage of a lot of them because you look at a lot of the segments that he did with them were very sexual.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did the bits with Trish Stratus. He did the bits with Stacy Keibler and a lot of these other women. So, I mean, I can definitely see him doing a lot of that stuff.
Was on it?
Oh, I think she knew about it.
She was out there.
She could have been part of it. I mean, I think they did name it. Stephanie McMahon knew a lot about it, too. So I think that's kind of why she left.
Honestly, Stephanie McMahon back in the day with her boobs. You never know.
Oh,
yeah.
Stephanie could have been up there.
100%. Stephanie was kind of hot back in the day.
Oh, no, she was hot back in the day.
Yeah.
Not kind of. She was.
Okay.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
when she first came out, when she first got her set, dude, when she was doing the bits with Jericho, oh,
yeah.
I'd rail that one.
Oh, you must have had a light, a lot of lonely nights there, Josh.
Probably. Every Monday night.
Raw for Raw.
You watch Raw to make it a Raw dog.
So, not to shift gears here, but we got about 15 minutes left, and I did want to talk about a couple things in free agency. But one of the big things was Cincinnati signing Trent Brown on the offensive line. I think it's only a one-year deal, but how do you feel about that signing for the Bengals? He's a massive, massive man. I think he's about 6'8", 375. But ultimately, will it help keep Burrow upright?
You know, now that we got Brown and Brown, so we can say, what can Brown do for you? I mean, I think that's a massive upgrade. And then you add on top of that we got Zach Moss as a running back. That's a very good blocker, unlike Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I sure hope that will help us on the edges. What still worries me is that defensive tackle in the middle going over Cordell Volson. I definitely do think it's going to definitely help. We can definitely wear some of these guys down by their frame, and that should open running lanes up in the third, fourth quarter, just because that defensive line is going to get – they're going to get beat up by some of these big guys.
Yeah.
No, but, I mean, the pocket can collapse from the inside or the outside, right? So I think it's a justifiable, like, worry to have, you know, your middle of the pack, not just your left and right.
Well, so, what Burrow does is he steps up in the pocket, so – your guard situation with your 18th overall pick should be maybe a guard/tackle that maybe can play both positions for depth as in a first-round draft pick. I mean, you never know. Injuries happen, but if you get a guy that can play tackle and guard to give Volson a push for his money, you never know, because your pocket is where Burrow needs to fucking stay healthy at.
I agree. I don't know if there's a guy – in the draft that really fits that mold, at least at number 18 overall. There is a guy that I like a lot that I think we could get in, like, the middle rounds, like around the – anywhere between the fourth and fifth round. And it's Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State. He's 6'4", 330. He's a big boy at guard. And he has a high football IQ. He's just a little bit limited athletically. But I don't believe that we ask our guards to pull a lot and get out in front in our run game. So I think Cooper Beebe could be a mauler, especially – you know, in pass protection. The 6'4", 335 is huge for a guard. So I think he's somebody that I would target maybe there in the fourth or fifth round if he's available.
And then I was talking about Matt a little bit earlier.
What's that?
I'm saying, couldn't you go after the guys, like the guy that the Rams just signed, Zeitler, I believe? He plays guard.
Oh, we could have. If he's already signed, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think the Lions got him on a one-year deal.
I'm not liking what's-his-face from Tampa much anymore, Alex Kappa. I mean, there's...
No, it seems like he got beat a lot, too, last year.
Yeah. There's a guy that is sitting out there, I believe, that... I'd have to look and see, but I really like him as a player. That's Dalton Risner.
I thought the Bengals should have went after him when he first hit the thing. And they probably could have got him on the cheat too.
Yeah.
Well, they still can get him on the cheat. He's still available.
Yep.
Is Reisner still available? Yeah, he is still available. You're right.
Yeah, he's still
a free agent.
Yeah, still available.
So,
but I was telling Josh this earlier. There's a guy from Oregon. He's a center, but he also plays guard, Jackson Powers Johnson.
Yeah.
You probably could get him in the first round at 18th because you got to realize Ted Caleros is a free agent for next year too.
Yeah.
And this guy can push. Yeah. He can play both inside guard positions and center.
I like that, Jackson Powers Johnson. I like that pick because you're right. He could play center or he could kick out the guard if needed. My biggest concern is defensive line. Now, I don't know if one of the top interior linemen is going to be there at 18. I don't know if Byron Murphy or Jerzon Newton are there at 18. But if it comes down to 18 – and let's just say Brock Bowers, Jackson Powers Johnson, and Jerzon Newton are all there, along with, let's say, J.C. Latham at tackle. My first priority would be getting Newton, the defensive lineman, first at 18 because I just think that's a big-time pressing need for us. And then maybe going after, like, a guard or a tackle in round two or so. But –
You're correct on that, but they already said he's going to be gone. Newton is. If Brian, Newton and Murphy are supposed to be
gone
by the team.
Okay.
So the thing is, in the second round, I think it's the other guy from Texas. The guy's 6'5", 366 pounds. You need a fat guy in the gap to take two
Devondre
guys on.
Sweat. That's who you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Devondre Sweat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, 360 pounds up the middle. We need someone big because you got Derrick Henry going twice a year against. You're going against the Browns twice a year against, and you got Pittsburgh twice a year against. They have a running game up the middle. That's where our weakness was last year when Reeder was out. Thing is, he's going to be a rotational piece. Next year, your first-round draft pick might be a defensive tackle, depending on how you finish at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Lou, Matt was telling me earlier, too, about a possible rumor that the New York Giants are looking to possibly trade out of the number six spot, trade with the Bengals. So, Matt, do you want to tell us about that rumor?
Would that be T. Higgins involved in that one?
Yes.
Yep.
So it was T. Higgins in our 18th pick for their first round six overall pick. But – that's us going after a top receiver again. So obviously,
we could draft that defensive tackle too.
You could, yeah. Byron Murphy and Newton would still be there at number six, and I actually like Byron Murphy a lot out of Texas. That's not a bad one. The one I had heard with the Giants though did not involve us getting the number six pick. It involved us getting their second round, one of their picks, which I think they have. It was us getting the 39th overall pick plus like a fifth rounder for T. Higgins.
But if they do the sixth overall pick, just imagine if you got another receiver to pair with Chase for the next 5 years and you're under control. That's cheap. The contract is.
You're absolutely right. You're 100% right. That's assuming, though, Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers are both still on the board at six, because from where I'm sitting, it seems that the Cardinals, who are at four, are hell-bent on taking Harrison or Nabers, and then the Chargers, who just let go of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, seem like a good fit for one of the other top receiver spots if they stay at five.
Well,
so
they're going to go after Joe Ott. I mean, imagine having Joe Ott and Rashad. I can't remember his names, but the other guy who plays right tackle for them, and they'll be set for Justin Schubert for years.
Yeah. But I thought the Chargers just went out and signed a big time tackle in free agency.
Yeah, but I think the Chargers are prone to move down. And, I mean, the rumor is right now Minnesota is going to try to go up in early for an early pick to get one of the quarterbacks. So if they can't move up far enough to get Caleb or Drake May or Jaden Daniels, then the rumor is J.J. McCarthy at number 5. That would leave either Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. available right at the number 6 spot. So we could technically go and get one of the top wide receivers on the board too.
Honestly, the Roman guy out of Washington is just as good as Nabers.
Wait, yeah. Pause. Not so fast, my friend. I like
what?
Rome Odunze, I'm not going to lie. But Malik Nabers, I think, is even better than Marvin Harrison.
No.
Marvin
not so
Harrison,
fast,
no.
My friend.
Wait a second. Wait, just wait a second. Hear me out on this, okay? Malik Nabers is a smooth route runner. He is a phenomenal
route runner. And so is Marvin Harrison.
He's got great body control, okay?
Malik Nabers. Marvin Harrison.
I'm telling you now, I like Marvin Harrison. I like Marvin Harrison a lot. But everybody's been ready to anoint him as the second coming of Randy Moss or whoever else they want to talk about as, and make him immediately one of the 5 best receivers in the NFL upon his rookie year. I'm telling you now, Malik Nabers might be the best wide receiver in this class.
But Roman Azuya, whatever. He's 6'3", 215. That is exact. That is exact same stats as Higgins. That is a perfect trade situation to go into and move up to, because you want a guy who can go up for the ball and soon to be a number one receiver. Malik's 6 foot. He might be smooth, but we already got that in Chase.
Yeah, but I'm not talking necessarily for the Bengals, because I don't believe that the Bengals should take a number one, should take a receiver. I don't think they should trade up and take a receiver. I think that this wide receiver class is so deep that if we got a second-round pick that was in the first 10 picks of the second round, we could find somebody very good, or we stand pat at 18 and we take Brian Thomas, who is 6'5" and he runs a 4.38 40.
Also out of LSU, right?
Also out of LSU.
I think honestly, and that Xavier Worthy out of Texas, that dude was fucking phenomenal too.
He's a player. The problem with Xavier Worthy, Josh, is he's only 5'9". He reminds me a lot of Marquise Brown.
I got you. Okay.
Or maybe you might have a little bit nightmares of, like, John Ross for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
But what's that other Texas guy that was really – apparently he ran a faster 40 by Julio Jones and A.J. Brown by a fucking mile. He just destroyed their 2 times.
Mitchell. Is the best receiver out of Texas. Xavier Worthy might be faster, but Adonai Mitchell has the more complete package than Xavier Worthy. Adonai Mitchell has phenomenal hands. He's a great route runner. He can use his hands good to get that little extra separation as needed. He's a plus blocker. Xavier Worthy is not a very good blocker. Adonai Mitchell is a total package, and I actually have Adonai Mitchell rated as my number 3 overall receiver. So I have it Nabers, Harrison, and then Adonai Mitchell are my top 3 receivers, and then I got Brian Thomas, and then I got Rome Odunze. That's my top 5 receivers in this class.
Do you see Brian Thompson Jr. going as a first rounder?
I see him going in the first round. I think there could be as many as 7 receivers taken in the first round this year. If you look at the back half of the draft, like the Bills and the Chiefs are all probably going to draft. The Ravens might even be in the market for another wide receiver. You know, I don't think they'll take one in the first round, but they might. I'm hearing that they might if someone's there. So I think it's a foregone conclusion that Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison and Rome Odunze are all gone in the first round, those four. And then I believe that Adonai Mitchell, Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey, and Xavier Worthy could also find their way into the first round near the end. I think the Texans, I hear Houston really likes both Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell. I hear Dallas really likes Adonai
Mitchell.
But Houston
doesn't have a first-round pick anymore.
I was going to say, Texans don't have a first-round draft pick.
That's right.
They traded away to Minnesota.
They traded 23 to Minnesota, didn't they? That's right. Okay. So, but I think this is going to be a possibly. I think Buffalo could. I think Kansas City absolutely is going to take a receiver at number 32. So it should be.
Yeah, they got Buffalo go for a defensive back in the first round.
Okay. I know they signed Curtis Samuel, and they still got Diggs, and they got Shakur. But to me, that's not a great receiving room, and Diggs is getting old. I think if they were,
and Diggs wants out.
Yeah, and Diggs wants out too. So if it's me, if I'm Buffalo, I'm probably going receiver in the first round. You know, you compare that receiver and Dalton Kincaid for the next decade or so, along with Josh Allen. But who knows? There's always a lot of smoke, right, guys, too, that comes out where teams are like, oh, look, we're looking at this. And interested. I heard that's what the Giants were doing. The Giants were leaking that they were interested in taking J.J. McCarthy at 6, so some team would come up and trade for him.
I don't know. Why would anybody pick him in the first round overall? He doesn't seem too good to be a quarterback in the first round.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I 1,000% agree with you. I don't see anything special in J.J. McCarthy. His film.
He seems like a career backup.
Yep, I agree. He reminds me of Jake Locker. Reminds me a lot of Jake Locker. And I don't see anything special with Caleb Williams. I don't see anything special with Bo Nix. For me, my top quarterbacks are Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix, and then Drake May. Those are my top three. Whoever gets Jaden Daniels, as long as he can stay healthy, if he can maybe add some more muscle, is getting probably what I think is the best quarterback in this draft. Michael Penix is up there for me. My problem is his age. He's a little bit older.
Age and injury prone. Injury prone.
Yeah, exactly. Age and injury prone. But Jaden Daniels, to me, I think is far and away the best quarterback in this draft.
But
yeah,
to go back, like
you were saying, everybody, there's a lot of rumors about Justin Jefferson, right? Minnesota doesn't want to trade him. But then you hear reports of Cincinnati. They turned down an offer from Cincinnati. Now that Pittsburgh's interested. I think there's a lot of smoke in Minnesota about Justin Jefferson possibly being on the trade block, and I think that might be a draft day trade. I'm going to call it now. I think that's a draft day trade going to happen.
And that's not a bad thing. Think about it. You sign a quarterback for 1 year, he's going to start for you. You sign a running back for 1 year, he's going to start for you. They're both trade bait at midseason at the most.
Yep.
So they're starting over from scratch a little bit. They have a good offensive line. They revamped their defensive line, okay? So they have a starter in Addison right now, but they have to add one more piece to their core, a quarterback. So they're going to draft a quarterback. That's the reason they got two first-round draft picks. They're going to trade Justin Jefferson for something more.
This is what I'm hearing right now, and I've been hearing this for a little while now, and so I find I agree with that point that they're probably going to trade Jefferson or they're going to use their first-round draft capital to move up. What I'm hearing is they're going to send number 11 and Justin Jefferson to the Patriots for the number 3 pick and a later pick in like the third or fourth round.
If I was the Patriots, I would trade Justin Jefferson to the Bengals for the 18th pick and T. Higgins and also another first-round pick next year.
Yeah.
If I was the Patriots, that's what I would do.
But as good as Jefferson is, it doesn't sound like they're giving up to get him. So.
Well, I think
look at Justin Fields. Fields. You got a 6th-round pick, convert to a 4th-round draft pick, depending on playing time.
Yep.
So he's
the difference between Justin Fields and Justin Jefferson is completely different there, too.
Yeah.
But, everybody said he's not worth 3 first-round picks.
You're not worth 3 first-round draft picks?
I think he's worth 2 at least, plus something else, like swaps or players or something of that sort.
That's what you're doing. Because T. Higgins was a 2nd-round draft pick.
I'm saying 2 on top of T is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It would be a steep price to pay. But I'll say this about Justin Jefferson. If he goes to the Patriots, if let's say the Patriots do that deal where Minnesota comes up to number 3 and they give up the number 11 pick in Jefferson to come up to number 3, Justin Jefferson's fantasy is shot. He is no longer a top 3 pick, and he may not even be a first-round pick in fantasy football if he goes to the Patriots and they're rolling out Jacoby Brissett and Bailey Zapp. Because that's assuming that the quarterback that they like is still – might not be there at 11. And then if they go –
They might get a Bo Nix. You never know.
And Bo Nix sucks balls. So, at the NFL level.
And you have Gerard Mayo, who's a defensive-minded coach. So, I don't know how much Jefferson's value is going to be on that Patriots team.
No, it'd be awful. If I was a dynasty owner and I saw Jefferson get traded for the Patriots, he'd immediately be going on the trade block, and
First of all, hear me out for this on this for a second. I don't see Minnesota moving up at all. They already have 2 first round draft picks. Okay, correct.
Yeah,
they have number 11 and number 23. Okay,
yep.
So they need to build their team back up. Like I said, you got 1 year quarterback and 1 year running back. Okay, you got a good offensive line. You got an okay defensive line, which you just bought in free agency. They bought 2 defensive ends that are somewhat decent to 3-year contracts. So if you trade Justin Jefferson, let's say hypothetical, to the Bengals for 18th overall and T. Higgins, that gives you 3 first rounders, and they give you basically a first rounder. Receiver right there in Higgins, right?
Yeah.
Imagine how much depth you can build up.
Yeah,
they're only trading for 1 first rounder then at that point.
Yeah.
Really?
Correct. I mean, you are correct, but they're also getting a receiver in T. Higgins. I'm just saying hypothetically, but just imagine if you have 3 first rounders this year, plus T. Higgins this year. Going to a rebuilding team, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to pay T, and you still have the same problem. You don't have a quarterback.
No.
So what's the point of bringing T over?
With the 3 first round draft picks, you can get a quarterback.
If they build the entire team up, then whatever quarterback they might draft next year comes into a situation where he's surrounded by a ton of talent. So like, kind of like Andy Dalton, right? Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that they should draft a quarterback that's similar to Andy Dalton, but Andy Dalton, his first couple of years in the league, was surrounded by talent that the Bengals already put in place or drafted alongside Andy Dalton or immediately after. They got A.J. Green. They had Geno Atkins. They had I'm trying to think of the defensive end that they also had there, but they put
Call
a
us good Dunlap.
Defense.
They had Dunlap. Carlos Dunlap.
Thank you. Carlos Dunlap. Thank you. They had a good defense in Andy Dalton's first 4 years there. And then they also surrounded him with A.J. Green and Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert, these guys. And it was
– They also had one of the best offensive lines, too, in the league.
Yes, yes, they did. They had one of the best. And by the way, speaking of that offensive line, can we go get that coach again? Can we fire fucking Frank Pollock and just go get the whoever was the offensive line coach between like 2008-2015?
Yeah, I get you, but I don't want to turn you off my hypothetically, I was saying. So you have three first-round draft picks. You have 11, 18, and 23. Why can't you trade 18 and 23 to move up for the Chargers' fifth-round draft pick?
You could.
Now
you're
going to
have to give the 11th up.
So that means you've given up even more for less then, right?
No, you get the fifth round draft. You get the fifth. You get the fifth and 11th, and you get the Chargers. They can build. They can build their offense, whatever they want to do.
I think the Chargers will want another draft pick in that one. I
don't
think they get
the two first rounders for one first rounder.
Yeah, but you know, we know them top five picks. They always with at least three picks or four picks, you know?
Yeah, but the usually the top 10 picks are best defensive backs, best receiver, or best quarterback. They already got their quarterback. They already got defensive backs. Yes, the receiver core is so strong and high-strung, you can get Brian Thomas in the 23 pick, the 18th pick. You can get someone else, too, with an offensive lineman. Think about that. You give up – You give up 18 and 23 to the Chargers for the fifth, and you get the fifth and the 11th pick, and you're in Minnesota?
Yeah, I think Minnesota, if they do that, I think hypothetically, I think they can build back a lot faster.
Yeah.
You know, they would have that number one. He's not going to be $30 million. You can probably sign T to maybe $23 million a year, $24 million a year. Then you can go draft a quarterback either this year or next year. But three first-round picks this year, I would load up. I would worry about a quarterback next year. Yes, you're going to suck probably this year, but get them players that you need to build your team up, and then next year you compete. That's kind of what Houston did last year.
You're getting Higgins for Jefferson straight up, okay? But then you're also, like I said, if you trade to the Chargers, you get the fifth, and you still have the 11th pick. You still have two first-round draft picks. I mean, you're just trading.
Yep.
You're trading your other two draft picks for the Chargers for one. So you can still build up. You can still get a topper. You can still get a topper quarterback, and you can go out and get an offensive lineman or another freaking receiver at number 11.
Yeah, and I think if the Bengals were to do that, they would have to probably give up the number one next year too, or number two pick. So
I'll give number two up in a heartbeat.
So
I would not get my number one up for next year though. That's for sure.
You still gotta pay Jefferson though, right?
Yeah, you still gotta pay Jefferson.
You still have to pay him, and you still have to pay Chase as well.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They all three said if they came on the same team, they would all take pay cuts. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Like they all said, they would take pay cuts to play together again.
I think you guys would agree with me on this. You'll still take Jefferson for 1 year for all that collateral.
If it gets me a Super Bowl, absolutely.
You don't know unless it happens. Injuries happen, but with Chase and Jefferson on the same team with Burrow, you would trade that away. I know you would. For 1 year, you would trade that much away.
Oh, absolutely, I would. I'm trying to buy a freaking Jefferson Cincinnati Bengals jersey instead of fucking Minnesota Jefferson jersey.
All right, guys, that is all the time we got. Matt, thank you for coming on the show, man. It was a pleasure having you and providing some insight there on football. That was great, man. Appreciate you calling in. But that is all the time. Hopefully by next, tomorrow, our theme song and new logo will be worth submitting to Josh and Sam to see if it's if we will go with it or if we'll go back to the drawing board with this company. So I appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back here next Wednesday. So take care, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.